Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
It was a beautiful day, sun beat down. I had the radio on, I was driving. Went by, me and Del were singing, little runaway, I was flying, yeah, running down a dream.
Not much breeze, just a little bit. Snap's good, hold is down, the kick is up, and it is good. Griff Serra, plenty of leg, was hooking a little bit, but it makes it through, and the Argos take the lead in this game. They draw first blood, but it's only 3 points instead of seven.
If you're wondering why I would lead with a UWF field goal clip, and there's something feels a little weird to you about that, you should feel weird about that, because this was deep into the first quarter against West Alabama on Saturday, and only 3 minutes left in the quarter, and first score of the game was a field goal, a 36-yarder. West Alabama comes back early in the second quarter.
Quarterback takes the snap, hands it to Bri Webb. Bri Webb dances around in the middle. It's inside, down near the goal line. Did he get in? Yes, he did. Touchdown. Argos couldn't get him on the ground. Webb scores, and West Alabama takes the lead in this football game.
7-3, and you're thinking, well, that's not so bad. I mean, we score 40, 50 points a game. What's the big deal? Well, you know, a little bit later on in the second quarter, on fourth and a bit, and doing a punt.
Logan Gregory will go back to his own. 37 is where he'll put his front foot.
UWF kicking.
Looking to pin West Al deep. Fake punt. They'll go to Leggett. Leggett's not going to get it, not even get close. He got into the left side of the line, but before he could go anywhere, he gets chopped down. West Al gets the football back near midfield.
Again, if you're starting to feel a little more apprehensive about this, you should run the fake punt, which good, you know, gutsy call. Do it. Doesn't work out. They don't always work out. If they always worked out, everybody always do it. And then, you know, nobody would think that the other thing was coming. Anyway, so we're down 3-7 still, and late into the second half, almost to the half, or late into the second quarter, almost to the half.
Plenty of football left, obviously, but if you're an Argo fan, I know you're like me, you're asking, what is going on in this game? You know, where is the offense that we saw last week?
It's exactly what you're asking. It's like, what about my team? I mean, I know our defense is great, you know, holding them to 10 points is great, but or 7 points at the time. But, you know, you're like, one field goal, and then who's this punter? I've never seen this punter before. He's out there, like, kicking the ball, three and out, six and out. You know, like, what is happening? So, West Al, third
snap
quarter.
Is good. The hold is down. The kick is up, and it is on the money. And so we've got a 10-point or 7-point lead for West Owls. They take the 10-3 lead.
They put another field goal up early in the third quarter, so that makes it 10-3. And again, what you're thinking, if you're me at this point and everybody else is, I mean, we're down by seven. We score seven, I mean, you know, 14, 21, easy points put up in a quarter. No big deal. Well, you know, there were some things, okay? Things are just kind of, everything felt out of sync. Everything felt like Pee Wee Jarrett's thrown to the wrong part of the field. You know, guys are getting called on things they didn't do wrong.
Fourth and two, fourth and three, but it forces a punt. So both defenses, actually this is three straight between the two teams. Blocked punt. John Giles got a piece of it. There's a flag coming in, but there's a return on Virgil Lemons up the side into territory. Giles is going to say he tipped the football. And that's what he's arguing. He said, I got a piece of the football. They threw a flag down.
And they wound up just giving us a penalty, so they got a first down out of it, and we didn't get anything out of it, even though John Giles, the man, the monster, got in there and touched it. But nothing, you know, so that didn't happen. And then, okay, UWF, right, gets – this is kind of an amazing play in the fourth quarter. So still, it's 10-3, and you're like, this is not even a UWF game. But
Melton's got a man down the side. He's looking for Nall.
West Alabama driving.
Did he pick it off? I believe he did. I think Elijah Williams just made a ridiculous play on the football. One and one were on each other. Nall and Williams, and I don't know how Williams caught that.
So Elijah Williams makes an incredible catch for an interception. We're going the other way in the next play.
Jarrett brings out the offense. He'll pull it out of the belly of Wilson. He's got to throw it. He's got to get rid of it quick. And it's Giles. If Giles can get back to football, he catches it to the 10, to the 5. He gets dragged down before he can get to the end zone, but that is the big play. That thing's going to go for 58 yards, 57 yards to the 3-yard line.
So UWF trailing only by 7 still in the fourth quarter with like 6 minutes to go, okay? But John Giles makes a 57-yard catch, run, gets down to the 3, amazingly gets dragged down, and they go backwards on first down and backwards on second down and backwards on third down. And on fourth down, 31-yard attempt, they're going for a field goal down 7 with 6 minutes left in the game.
Gregory waits the snap. Snap is low. Kick is up. It is good. It goes through. And the Argos have cut it to a 4-point game with 5:58. There's still time.
But, man, what is going on? Pee-wee Jarrett again with the ball, 3 minutes to go.
Jarrett with the play clock at 10 and counting down, takes the snap. Third and 14. Do they have a big play in them? Pee-wee throws it. He's got a man. It's Giles. He overthrows him. If he hits him, Giles is gone.
All day, just like that. Again with the ball, 30 seconds later.
Caleb Nobles trusts his offense. I'll go with him. I'll ride with him.
Takes fourth and 14. Game on the line.
Stand back there all day. He fires it. In the middle, he's got him. The ball pops out as he hits the ground. He had K.J. Franklin. Franklin went to the turf, and as he went to the turf, he lost the football.
Like all day, like that. West Alabama comes the other way, going for a field goal.
Guyton steps out, lines it up. Sullivan to hold.
1:50 to go in the game, down by 6. Down by 4.
It. The kick is pulled to the left. It is no good.
So they missed their kick, so they're still 4-point difference, right? About 2 minutes left in the game, so there is a chance. Pee-wee Jarrett with the ball, 2nd and 10, going the other way.
Jarrett brings him to the line of scrimmage. Two receivers each side of the set. Ball's in the middle of the field. He's got a back on his left shoulder. Got to get it out fast. Throws an interception. I don't know what route Giles is running, but it's picked off. Up the sideline, knocked out of bounds, inside the 15. And that's probably going to do it right there.
Yeah, that was that. Just like the most frustrating day of football ever to watch this. Because like 10-6 is a score of a bad quarter for UWF, you know? I mean, 6 points, 2 field goals. Like, that just doesn't happen. I don't even know how many times they punted. 7, maybe? 8? It was ridiculous. So after the game, you know, the number 6 team in the nation, you know, coach gets asked the question, you know, hey, man, you know, what do you think, right? This is Brian Henry on the sideline with Caleb Nobles.
Well, coach, unfortunately, it's one of those games where you outgain them, and second half, you guys, your defense played lights out. Just couldn't get that offensive momentum consistently.
Yeah, no, that's on me. This loss is on me, and I take full responsibility of it, man. This is, you know, I've been trying to get our guys prepared, and I told them this team is a good team, and Coach Gilliland does a great job, and I didn't get the offense going tonight. This loss is on me solely. Nobody else in the program but myself.
Well, I appreciate that, but just, you know, what happened? Like, it's just a bizarre thing to watch. It's like everybody suddenly forgot how to do what they know how to do, other than the defense, who only gave up 10, which is, you know, still well within their, like, that's good, okay? That's pretty good, but you just expect the offense to put up 40 every time, and it just didn't happen.
Well, your defense obviously came up with the stops they needed, got the turnovers, got the late stops to give your offense a chance. What do you take away from this to move forward? Because it's not getting any easier next week.
No, it won't get any easier the rest of the schedule. And, you know, we knew this was going to be a tough part of the schedule coming into the season. And, you know, our guys got to keep buying into the work and be able to flush this and be able to move on. And don't let one loss in the conference change how we play next week on the games to move forward.
Good luck next week, sir.
Thank you. Go Argos.
Yeah. So there you go. Now you watched it all. Of course, you can always listen to the games on our sister station, ESPN Pensacola, 99.1 AM, 1330. Meanwhile, on Sunday, look, I know that this is a result that probably a lot of y'all right now are listening are not going to be happy with me for sharing this, but you got to understand I was born in the Detroit area. I was born in Pontiac, Michigan, Royal Oak, Detroit, Durand, Michigan, which, you know, there might be one person in the audience that's ever heard of it. Okay, so that's my background, and it has been a long time since anybody could be excited about being a Lions fan. So, to put this in perspective, y'all know I'm a diehard Cardinals fan, but I grew up a Tigers fan. So the World Series, you know, for me, was a little hard watching my Cardinals play my Tigers. Oh, I want everybody to win. But no, anyway, so I'm not a big, like, any particular team in the NFL, but there's always a part of me that's kind of hoping I can be a Lions fan someday, because nobody wants to admit that out loud. But against the Bucs yesterday, a team that has been doing incredibly well this year under Jared Goff.
Third and long. Under pressure, Goff was protected. St. Brown has it. Needs to get to the 14-yard line, and he will. Craig Reynolds through the big block, and St. Brown works all the way downfield for the touchdown.
The craziest run. So he passes to Amon-Ra St. Brown on the left side of the middle of the short down, like maybe 8 yards out. And he runs backwards for 4 yards to the right to get behind an oncoming sports car of a block that was going to come down and give him a downfield block so he can run all the way around to the right side, hurdle a guy, and get into the end zone. Crazy run. Then in the third quarter.
Touchdown!
Oh, sorry, that's that same clip. Touchdown for him. And then in the third quarter.
Goff looking deep. Wants it all. Jameson Williams looking for the ball. Got it! Touchdown!
Oh, man. They look good. They look like, I don't want to get too excited because nobody gets excited about the Lions ever unless you got a death wish. You know, just enjoy the pain. But still, it's a kind of an exciting thing for those of us that are from that area. And I am, even though I will not claim that I'm some big, deep, diehard Lions fan or anything. But, you know, it's just fun. It's fun to watch them not just suck. So 437-1620. They beat the Bucks 20-6 yesterday. They go to 5-1. 5-1 for the Lions. 521 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Ugh, after a big dinner, my nighttime heartburn would keep me up. I'd be taking antacid after antacid all night long. But then I tried Prilosec OTC. Just one pill a day blocks my frequent heartburn for a full 24 hours, giving me one-and-done heartburn relief. Without heartburn keeping me up, I could have a restful night's sleep.
Prilosec OTC. One pill a day, 24 hours, zero heartburn.
It's possible while taking Prilosec OTC. Use as directed for 14 days to treat frequent heartburn, not for immediate relief.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products, and we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This year's WSRE Wine and Food Classic will pay tribute to the legendary chefs of PBS and celebrate rising stars like the final three from The Great American Recipe. Now's the time to get your tickets for a legendary dinner in the WSRE Amos Studio on October 14th and for the 33rd annual Walkabout Tasting on October 21st at the SCI Building in downtown Pensacola. Go to WSRE.org for tickets and event details.
Never miss a breaking news story or important weather update again. Download the News Radio Pensacola app and opt in for push notifications.
That's my pie.
Good morning, 524 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is eagerly sitting in the newsroom waiting for my call to tell us the headlines, David. Oh, put him on. Another one. There you go. Hey, David, how about that?
Hey, there we go. I am here, and I am eager to give you these headlines,
Andrew.
I knew it.
I knew you would be.
Absolutely. A vote for the new Speaker of the House expected tomorrow at noon. House Democratic Whip Catherine Clark said the vote for Representative Jim Jordan will happen, although it is still unclear whether he will have enough votes to get the position.
He says he's got 217. And there are some Republicans who are like, I'm never voting for Jim Jordan. So we'll see.
I guess that's about all you can say. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Rite Aid filing for bankruptcy. They filed for Chapter 11 protection yesterday. Of course, they're citing declining sales, billions of dollars in debt. Hold up. Billions of dollars
nice.
In debt. There we go.
Look,
I'm remembering.
I love it.
And more than 1,000 lawsuits linked to the opioid epidemic. And Taylor Swift, boy, she appears to be just killing it on everything. Her Taylor Swift Eras Tour box office movie theater, whatever you want to call it, has now opened and set an opening week record for a concert film.
Yeah, no, it's already in one weekend the highest grossing concert film ever. So
$97 million it made over the weekend.
How much?
$97 million.
Nice. You're the best. 525 on News Radio 92.3. Yeah, and even doing cameos on SNL with her, can I say boyfriend? Is it official? Who cares? Travis Kelce. Sorry, I do not care at all. And the more they try to throw this nonsense in my face all day long, the less I care. Like, I was sort of okay with it at a distance. You know, like, this is fine. If people want to be excited about this nonsense, that's fine. But, you know, then it's on my football game, and now it's on my Saturday Night Live, although I don't really call it my Saturday Night Live. I mean, who would want to own that? But, you know, I'm just, you know, it's all over. I can't get away from it. And, you know, fine, whatever. You know, she made him American royalty, and we'll see if, you know, he gets her kicked out of the family or royals afterwards, but whatever. 526 on News Radio 92.3. These are just the things that happen. What else do we have going on? Jake is sitting in for Candy again this morning. Jake, this is going to bother you. Maybe it'll bother you.
Okay.
Did you see that Best Buy is eliminating a section of the store?
Yes, I did see that.
There are no more DVD sales at Best Buy. The ability to purchase physical copies of movies is now going to be entirely what? At the, like, Salvation Army?
Yeah, like thrift store.
Yeah, thrift store. I haven't been in a pawn store in a long time. So I used to would have said you can go to the pawn store because they'll have racks and racks of them for cheap. They might even be just throwing them out. I don't even know if anybody, you know, is selling these things. I guess you go to the flea market probably still and get DVDs or order them online.
Right.
But, they say that they, you know, nobody's buying them. Everybody streams everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's on the cloud. I'm just telling you, y'all aren't prepared for the apocalypse in which you can't connect to the cloud, but you're still managed to run your electronics at home and missing your DVDs. That's the scenario I'm holding out for. I guess Best Buy is not going to sell movies anymore. Although I do have to wonder, like, how many people were buying them there anyway? That was it like an add-on item, a stocking stuffer? I don't know. That's not...
I don't know why anybody would buy a DVD or who still has a DVD player that works.
Stop it.
I'm
What's
sorry.
What's wrong with you?
I spent all those years dubbing all that music to CDs so I could have them in my car, and then now I got to do it on a hard drive. It's just it's too much.
Okay, I know this makes me sound old, but, you know, I'm my age. I'll own it. I still don't really trust the internet as a resource for entertainment.
Yeah.
I still feel like... it's got to be on something I own or it can't be trusted. It'll just go away. You know, Netflix will just take it away from me or something. And so if it's on my DVR, that's real. I have that in my house. If it's on a VHS, I still do have those. If it's on a DVD, I still own those.
And back in the day, when you really loved a band or an artist, you would support them by buying their record.
Right.
And you had a copy of them. You felt like you owned a little piece of it. And on the internet, you're right. They can just take it away anytime they want.
It could just go away and at any moment. I'm not happy about that. And also, you know, we still have Dish in addition to some streaming services. And, you know, so if there's a storm, you can't get live TV, bad storm, but I still have my DVR. I mean, I still have stuff on this side of the safety wall. I mean, and I don't feel good about going without anything on this side of the safety wall. 529 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about that next house or to sell the one you've got or both, or you want to acquire one for a rental, you know, whatever you're thinking about, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty can help you with that. She's fantastic. They're fantastic. What she's done is she kind of built up this practice of, you know, just selling herself and then, you know, realized that, man, I can do more with more people. And so she surrounded herself with people who are kind of like-minded, like-hearted, feel and think about this industry the way she does and love people and love to serve people. And so now she's got a whole team. And they sold 230 homes last year. which is still, I still cannot wrap my, I know, I've said it 100 times. I just can't wrap my brain around it. It's true. And somehow in that process of selling homes in a couple of days, very common to get a home under contract within a couple of days or the same day, they still manage to make you feel like you're the only one that they're working with. You know, like 5 homes a week they're selling, but you feel like you're their only client, which is, again, I don't understand, but it wouldn't be me, but they do it well. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty. 530 here on News Radio 92.3. Oh, interesting. Just a sort of a little note-ish, but if you go to UWF, there might be some funds available soon for child care. They got $500,000 coming from the feds for on-campus child care programs that's meant to go to higher institutions of higher learning and to help low-income students who have children as a way of helping them get out of that kind of cycle of lower income, according to the U.S. Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona. So, good news. Yeah, I wanna know.
Thursday, October 12th, 2023. I've got 9:31 a.m. We are here for the regular Board of County Commissioners meeting. Anyone has an electronic device, if you'll just please make sure you have that on vibrate, silent, stun, whatever, just as long as the ringer's not on and doesn't disturb the meeting this morning.
I like Colton Wright with the very light Star Trek reference there. Put your cell phones on stun. Oh, man. So this is at the county commission meeting last week, and this is on Thursday. Colton taking a moment to talk a little bit about what's going on in Israel, which is appropriate to do when something like this is taking place.
I'm sure everyone's aware of what's happening in the Middle East right now and the atrocities that have been inflicted on Israel. And while that's not a county-specific issue, I think we all need to be thinking about our brothers and sisters over there. We have a lot of men and women in our armed forces that will likely, one way or another, will be involved in that conflict. And some pretty unspeakable atrocities have happened over there. You start talking about terrorists that have gone in and, you know, murdered women and children.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, when, you know, you think about awful things, it's hard to think about anything that's more awful than what has been done to Israel by Hamas in this particular example. And to his credit, I think this is something that a lot of folks have thought after they see, you know, terrorists coming at you out of the sky and what parachutes and, you know, ultralights and stuff like that. As you think, good Lord, you know, I think I've seen movies like this back in the 80s. You know, that's like Red Dawn-esque is what it feels like.
Just be thankful for that we live in America. You know, we can hope that something like that could not really happen here. But I think it's a good example of why we have the Second Amendment. Right, and you look at Israel, and something to be said about having everyone up until age 40 still has a requirement to serve as a reservist, and that their military and their government went and handed out rifles to their citizens to defend themselves. I think there's something to be said about that in a well-regulated militia, and it's an example of what it's like when you're a small country that is persecuted by virtually everyone around you. And they have the ability to defend themselves. And I know I speak for the entire board. I think I speak for virtually everyone in Santa Rosa County saying that we stand with Israel. And just keep those people in your thoughts and prayers, please.
Most definitely. And, you know, right now, part of what's going on here is we have sent another carrier group to the Eastern Mediterranean. This is... I don't want to overstate what that means, because certainly the United States has not been involved in any of this fighting yet. But you listen to some of the comments over the weekend by, for example, you know, Kirby or Jake Sullivan or, you know, Tony Blinken. And the takeaway for me is that it's hard to believe that this is only and going to stay a relatively small military operation within the land space occupied by Israel. But I think at this point, that's kind of what we hope turns out to be the case. You know, right, Israel is massing, you know, all kinds of troops on the border around Gaza. I mean, they've got Gaza completely sealed off now. You know, and they've got, you know, tanks, Merkavas, they've got, you know, military, they've got, you know, portable artillery, like the, was it the not the Javelins, but the Paladins, and troops, you know, and they've equipped everybody with, you know, they've basically doled out the military arms to folks and resupplied what's essentially their version of the National Guard. And they've told all of the Gazans go to the southern half of Gaza. And something like 600,000 people have obeyed out of a 1.2 million population in the northern half. The other 600,000 either can't or won't or have been threatened by Hamas to stay because Hamas wants to keep them there as human shields, right? The last thing Hamas wants is for the Israelis to come in and know that there are no civilians there to be, you know, to be hurt as collateral damage. And they're trying to get out, like, to go out to Egypt. And so we've sent not just the one, we got the Gerald Ford, is already in theater, but now we've got another because they had rocket attacks from Hezbollah in the north off Lebanon. So on Saturday, Lloyd Austin put out a statement, says, I've directed the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower carrier strike group to begin moving to the eastern Mediterranean as part of our effort to deter hostile actions against Israel or any effort toward widening this war following Hamas's attack on Israel. Strike group includes, and so we're a Navy town, right? We're an Air Force town. We got Hurlburt right there. You know, we Eglin right down the road. You got Whiting where we train all the pilots, you know, all the helicopter pilots anyway, for the Marines, the Coast Guard, and the Navy. And, you know, what, half, two-thirds of all other pilots also for the Navy and the Marines. And, you know, so we take this stuff pretty seriously, right? We move a carrier strike group in. That means people who have been here, people who have lived here, people who have transitioned through here, friends and family of people who live here now. So we've already got the Ford is in theater to the south, the Normandy, the Thomas Hudner, the Ramage, the Kearney, the Roosevelt. The Air Force has moved in F-15, 16s, and A-10s. Okay, that's the Eagle, the Falcon, and the Warthog, or the Thunderbolt, depending on, you know, which configuration. But now the Eisenhower is moving in the direction of probably the northern portion of Israel. And that's the that's got the Philippine Sea with it, the destroyers Gravely and Mason, and Carrier Wing 8. Nine aircraft squadrons, again, all of those folks who flew through here, right? They started at NES Pensacola. They went to Whiting, most of them. If they're on helicopters, they, you know, I mean, just that's us over there. And the embarked headquarters staff, too. So, you know, the increased U.S. force posture, according to Lloyd Austin, signals the U.S.'s ironclad commitment to Israel's security and our resolve to deter any state or non-state actors seeking to escalate this war. And so non-state actors would be like Hamas and Hezbollah. State actors would be Iran. I mean, that's the state actor in the region. We're not worried about Jordan. You know, Syria's, good Lord, what? But, you know, we're not worried about that. We're not worried about Egypt. Today, you know, go back a few years, we were, they were, but, you know, not today. So we're, you know, this is Iran is what we're thinking about. And, you know, when you have Jake Sullivan on Face the Nation yesterday talking about that and getting asked the question about Iran and about the second carrier group, he says,
the United States deployed a second aircraft carrier to the eastern Mediterranean. I'm wondering if you have new intelligence that shows that the threat from Iran is growing.
We don't have some specific new intelligence that the threat is different today from yesterday. The threat yesterday was real. The threat today is real. There is a risk of an escalation of this conflict, the opening of a second front in the north, and of course of Iran's involvement. That is a risk, and that's a risk that we have been mindful of since the start.
Yeah, that's a risk. So they are concerned about that, and this is to send the message of discouragement, right?
It's why the president moves so rapidly and decisively to get an aircraft carrier into the eastern Mediterranean, to get aircraft into the Gulf, because he wants to send a very clear message of deterrence to any state or any actor that would seek to exploit this situation.
Right, which is the right answer. You know, overwhelming show of potential force, and you, like, make people think 18 times before they try and do something. But still, this is the concern, like, right? Like, Hezbollah is taking advantage, you know, Israel fought back, okay, shot back. Iran so far hasn't done anything, but the reporting has been that Iran was behind this, and not just like the speculative reporting, but the Wall Street Journal claims they have, you know, evidence, communications. Meanwhile, the White House is not saying that they have that same evidence. And, you know, the CBS, I don't know whether I want to say to their credit, because there's a part of me that thinks this is exactly what journalists should do. There's another part of me that thinks, why would you bother asking somebody who would organize a terrorist attack like this? Why would you platform them? Why would you listen to them? Why would you interview them? But they did. They interviewed one of the spokespeople for Hamas, Dr. Ghazi Hamid, and they asked him, you know, did you receive outside aid? Did Iran help you with this?
Did you receive support from outside? Did you receive support from
Iran? No, it is just a decision taken by Hamas only.
You received no support from any country outside of Gaza?
No, never.
That's what my Iranian handlers told me to say, is that I didn't receive any, right? Because, look, you know he's going to lie about everything. Of course. That's why platforming him is a little bit, you know, like, what's the point? I mean, I'm playing him, I guess, because, you know, they did, and I figure it's worth hearing. But you know that they're going to lie about everything if that suits their purposes. You know, he went on, the next thing he said, they didn't play the clip, but in that interview.
Now, he also denied Hamas fighters deliberately targeted civilians, saying their target was only the Israeli military.
So we know 100% certainty that that's false. We know that's false. Across the board, the attacks deliberately targeted civilians and did not target military targets. And so we, you know, what's my old phrase? If somebody who lies about one thing will lie about anything, right? So we know they lie about what they're doing. And so, of course, the claim that Iran is not involved in this, it's almost like if you say something, I assume the opposite is true because you're lying about everything. And, you know, their claim is that Israel is genociding us. That was his verbiage. I'm like, brother, false. Like, I just know that's false. So back to Jake Sullivan, the question of what are we doing to get the American citizens out? Now, Margaret Brennan keeps using this number of 500 to 600 Americans helped. I think what she must mean is, because the reporting generally has said about 150 Americans, but I'm also hearing sort of the 200 hostages. So I'm, again, not 100%. Nobody's 100% sure about these numbers. I'm imagining that their 5 to 600 number must include people, Americans who had been in Gaza. So not just taken hostage like from Israel, but some combination of the two. In any case, CBS is the only entity that I know of that's using this number 500 to 600. But here's what she asked him.
This is going to be very brutal urban warfare when Israel moves in to Gaza. How much time do you have to get the 5 to 600 Americans trapped there out?
Well, Margaret, we're in daily, indeed hourly, contact with our counterparts in the Israeli Defense Forces and security services. We're talking to them about their plans for moving in on the ground in Gaza. It's not for me to say what their timetable is. I think they will need to speak to that.
Yeah, and I know you might have heard at the top of the hour, you had, I think it was Tom Cotton was on Fox News and basically made the claim that we have American operators who go and rescue American hostages in all kinds of circumstances. Yeah, I'm not sure that we're going to be sending in like the SEALs or, you know, the Rangers or, you know, AFSOC to go get folks while Israel is on the verge of a pretty massive retaking of Gaza, what might wind up in a leveling of the northern half of the zone. Nobody seems to quite know what to expect out of this, but they've been dropping leaflets like crazy all over the area. Get out, as you heard, about half of the population has fled to the south. So I'm not sure that we're likely to send our special operators in under those circumstances ahead of the Israelis or while that's going on. But again, you know, obviously they're talking to the Israelis, and the Israelis know that, you know, our support is a crucial part of their national defense strategy, which they have. But if there ever comes to be a concern about how they're not doing the best they can to make sure that American citizens are protected in this invasion or takeover or policing or whatever you want to call it that's coming, well, you know, there's going to be some pretty stern behind-the-scenes conversations, I would expect. 549 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Are you good?
Good morning, 5:52 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. And, yeah, I'm getting people text me in and talk about how, you know, their relatives have, you know, are in the Middle East, right? So that's it's one thing to have just our countrymen in general. And obviously, look, if you have, you know, 10,000 people between two aircraft carriers plus another, I don't even, I'm just throwing an estimate out there, a couple thousand between the other eight ships or so that are involved in these two carrier strike groups, you know, it's a lot of people. And some of them are from here. And again, all of the pilots, all of, and so many of the other folks came through or came to, or, you know, we've touched them one way or the other. 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he's now learned what Israelis are going through. His delegation was apparently in Israel and rushed to a shelter in Tel Aviv here over the weekend. Schumer and several senators were meeting with government leaders and families there. And Schumer says they were having lunch when the air raid sirens went off. Rockets were being launched by Hamas. Always a scary thing when that happens. A vote for the new Speaker of the House expected Tuesday at noon. House Democrat Whip Catherine Clark says the vote for Representative Jim Jordan will happen tomorrow, but it's still unclear if he has enough votes. And, well, speeding tickets in Georgia don't always make the top headlines, Andrew.
This was everywhere, though.
kind of a crazy thing. A driver was going 90 in a 55. Which is fast, but I don't know. It doesn't seem that fast. But when he got speeding ticket.
You're saying it wasn't that fast to go 90 and a 55?
No, I'm saying it's fast, but okay, it doesn't seem as.
That's a reckless endangerment charge. It's over 20 over.
But when he got his speeding ticket, it had a $1 million fine on it.
I think it was like 1.4, wasn't it? Some crazy thing like that? Yeah.
Absolutely.
But
apparently it's common practice. They just put this on there to make sure people show up in court. I guess if $1.5 million or whatever. Yeah.
$1.4 million, your lake house, your child's firstborn. Like, you know, what would you? It's just a placeholder. So, OK. Seems like that's not what you should put on a ticket is a false number, but okay, fine, you know, whatever. It would definitely get your attention, you know, I would think so.
David,
thanks so much for the update. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, as you know, there's kind of this ongoing effort by some folks to find out if the residents of Perdido, and which is not just Perdido Key, I know sometimes people who don't live in that area, I was having this conversation with my wife too. She's like, I tend to think of Perdido as just Perdido Key. I know. I mean, we all do. But it's, you know, really everything like west of Blue Angel and, God, I have to look at the zone again, but it's a pretty big stretch of the area. I mean, not all west of Blue Angel, but, you know, going up that far anyway. So there's a lot of folks in that vicinity who will be affected if Perdido gets to the point of having a vote on incorporating, right? What some people are calling Perdido City. And we got a call in earlier from a listener said that there's a Stop Perdido City meeting that's going to be coming up this Thursday at 6 p.m. at Jim Bailey Middle School. So whether you are for or against it, you know, I like to listen to all sides. And I haven't really formed a strong opinion about this. I thought that the We Are Perdido meetings have been extremely informative. I learned a ton about the process of how this works. We haven't actually had a lot of time to talk about it on the show. I never did go back and cut up all of the audio from that last meeting. It was very interesting, and it's kind of been on my list to do to get caught up on. But anyway, so they're having a meeting 6 o'clock Thursday, the Stop Perdido City meeting. So, and I assume that a lot of people who show up there will be interested in hearing the other side or maybe even in favor of it and want to hear, you know, again, listen to your fellow citizens in what they're saying in both directions, right? 5:56 on News Radio 92.3. What else do we – oh, so Marco Rubio. This is – there are a few things in the world that irritate me or get me kind of, you know, flustered and angry like censorship does, which I know you'll think is funny because, you know, well, Andrew, don't you believe in some? I do. I'm a parent. And I believe that, you know, kids shouldn't have access to everything. Even the kids in the school shouldn't have access to everything. But for adults, I'm much more, you know, what does it mean to be an adult if you can't have access to the whatever information that you want to have access to? But the social media companies... It's weird to me because they make their living on fostering conversation and getting you to share ideas. And then they turn around and they seem to very, very ham-fistedly censor the ideas that run afoul of whatever policy they've got. Now, I know that they don't have like this giant, you know, bank of people that are working on it. I get that it's a very labor-intensive thing to do accurate policing of information. And so what you get is inaccurate policing of information or bizarre policing of information. For example, Marco Rubio, who had done an interview with Larry Kudlow in which he was talking about the Middle East, and he got taken off of YouTube for hate speech. A U.S. senator got taken off of YouTube for what they called a violation of their, you know, policies against, you know, unkind communities or whatever. So here's what he actually said that got him off of YouTube. But of course, you can find it on Twitter, right? So
we need to start waking up and saying we can continue to project all the Western attributes we want on Iran, on Hamas, and on groups like that. But these guys are ideological psychopaths, and they're savages. And they would, if they could, not just kill every Jew they could get their hands on, they would kill Americans in the process as well. And in fact, they openly call for that. We should start believing these people on what they say.
So which part of that was even dubious? Well, they called them savages. Oh, the people that raped women and burned and beheaded children and kidnapped teenage girls. And I mean, that's calling them savage is the problem? Like, that just is. What else would you call it? So, yeah, they decided that that was worth censoring. A U.S. senator describing in not even particular, just in the general sense, what these terrorists have done, but that's enough to get them banned off of YouTube. It's a weird world.